Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions.
18 plus. Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Brandon P. Stacy. I want to welcome everyone to the Mere Christianity podcast. We're having some technical difficulties, so we're going to try real quick to see if we can get Jared in on the line. Tonight, we're not going to have Mr. Byron T. Ellis, unfortunately. He is on vacation. I guess, well, he's actually on a vacation with his wife, celebrating his anniversary. So I guess it's not unfortunate for him that he's not going to be on the show tonight. But like I said, it is just going to be me and Jared. And hopefully he can get on the line here pretty soon. In the meantime, what I can let everybody know is last week we talked about how I had a baby and I still have a baby. And so it's been a pretty difficult 12 days, to say the least. I don't know how many of our listeners have children or are expecting children, but I'll tell you one thing you can expect is some sleepless nights. I think the first night that we got home was a Sunday evening around 4 o'clock, and I don't know if I went to bed until 4 o'clock the next morning. So it was a long night, and I think probably in the last 14 days, I've probably had maybe 20 hours of sleep, if I had to guess. I had to go to work the first 3 days after I got home, that Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. We got home on a Sunday night, and I had work Monday morning, Tuesday morning, and Wednesday morning, and probably the hardest, most difficult 3 days of work that I've had in a really long time, completely just emotionally drained, physically drained, up all night. But after that, I got to go on vacation for a week and a half, and so here I am in the sweat box in my studio, my office, sweating all by myself, enjoying a nice Carbach Cappadillo, waiting to see if Jared's going to actually be able to get on the line. And I don't know if that's going to happen. And I know that no one wants to listen to me talk for 40 minutes straight. I can barely handle listening to myself talk for 40 minutes straight. My wife definitely doesn't like to listen to me talk for 40 minutes straight. But to give everybody a little bit of a heads up, I guess while we're waiting for Jared to get on the line, what we wanted to talk about tonight, the episode is titled The Lost Art of Listening. Earlier in the week, Jared had sent us being Byron and I, a list of questions and some ideas, some things to think about, some things to look at in preparation for this evening's podcast. And basically what Jared was wanted to, what he was getting at in the pre-show was, you know, how ought Christians respond to others in apologetic conversations, particularly how should we respond with our listening? You know, it seems like a lot of times Christians have a really bad habit of at least, you know, people that I know, and especially from my own past experiences, you know, engaging people in apologetic conversation, a really bad habit of, you know, not really being concerned about what the other person has to say. You know, you have your list of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 arguments, you know, of why Christianity is true. And so when you get into the conversations, you're just ready to, you know, list off your first argument and your second argument. And you're not really concerned with actually dialoguing with another person or having a conversation with another person. But instead, you just want to, get to your argument. And so Jared, is that you?
Yeah, I had a technical difficulties. I actually had to call in via cell phone.
Well, yet
another
reason
why we're going to, yet another reason why we're going to revamp the structure. We apologize for, it seems like every week we don't get any better. We get worse, but we're going to fix that. We're in the process. So I apologize for being late.
Well, hey, I will say, I think your audio doesn't sound half bad for calling in on your cell phone. I'll be honest. I mean, it's, I've heard worse audio. Thanks, Byron. Yeah. I'm actually connected, directly this time. I'm not calling in through Skype. I'm just all up in Blog Talk Radio tonight. So that's how I'm doing it. But, I guess give you a quick rundown, Jared, of where I left off. I was basically, besides trying to kill some airtime with my boring life, basically gave the listeners a little introduction into what we plan to talk about a little bit tonight, about how, you know, when it seems to me anyway, that oftentimes when Christians are engaging, unbelievers or people from another faith, whatever the case, you know, people who are not Christians, we tend to be very quick to want to get to our own arguments and to say what we have to say and pretty much just disregard, you know, what the other person has to say. We don't engage them in dialogue. We're not interested in actually having a conversation. We're more interested in trying to win an argument, which is completely contrary to what the scriptures have to say about, one, just engaging anyone in a conversation, and specifically, you know, when we're engaging someone in a, you know, in a conversation in regards to apologetics, that we ought to, you know, do so with gentleness and with respect, that we ought to do so setting Christ apart in our heart as the Lord. But before we get into all that, how's your week been, Jared? What's been going on, man?
Yeah, so two weeks since I've been on the podcast, and it feels like, man, a lot has happened. Had a chance to go to Houston a couple weeks ago and hang out with rapper KB. People may know him from the, I guess he's part of the 116 Click on Reach Records and all that kind of jazz. You know, long-standing relationship with a guy that was actually, is now his road manager. So got to go over there and hang out with him and the wife and KBJ, little KB Jr., as they call him, KBJ. So that was a lot of fun. In Houston, about 5,000 kids showed up, so really cool to be downtown Houston, even though it was hot. We had a chance to kind of hang out backstage with KB and the fam and with Blanca and her husband and some of the band members there. And man, 5,000 kids. I don't know how familiar our audience is with KB's music, but you got 5,000 kids standing out there kind of doing a war cry for his song, "I Believe That We Will Win."
Well, I'm used to having a 5,000-person audience.
Yeah. Well, you know, so it's cool, though, when you think about, like, kind of the times that we live in, you know, and it feels like Christians are kind of getting beat up a little bit, and sometimes maybe rightly so for not portraying Christ the way we should. But really cool to see 5,000 kids excited and screaming and yelling, you know, that "I believe that we will win," you know, that one day we will, you know, see every knee bow and every tongue confess, and that pain and suffering will be put to an end. It was kind of a surreal moment, man. It was really cool. So
That was awesome.
A couple Tuesdays ago, did that. Had a really cool opportunity to speak to the youth group at the church that Brandon and I, that Brandon used to go to, that Byron used to go to, that I somehow still haven't left yet. It seems like every week we talk about it. Every week we talk about everybody's gone but me. I'm the only one that's still there. But I had a chance to speak to the kids on Wednesday night, so that was really cool. We kind of spoke on Genesis 3:1-3, and kind of went through those three verses. A lot going on, talking animals and the fall of man, and Eve kind of not really knowing what was going on, and Satan kind
typical
of
woman
showing us this kind of, it says kind of like Satan showing his first tricks, man, just trying to get people to doubt that God is good and believe that sin is not bad, and he's still doing it today. So I really had a cool chance to talk to the teenagers about that. Went to a new Bible study on Tuesday with a group of men, which was really cool. Not something I usually do. Usually I'm in mixed company for most of the classes, or any opportunities I have to speak or teach is usually mixed company. So it was really cool to be with just a group of dudes and kind of going through, I think they were doing Romans chapter 10. They get together at a little local restaurant. I just kind of wandered in and, you know, just fit right in with a bunch of brothers in Christ. And that was a lot of fun. So yeah, I got a new class starting up next week. We're looking at Philip Yancey's What's So Amazing About Grace. So football season around the corner, so man, I'm just busy, and then Brandon has a baby, so he's just as busy.
Yeah, dude, I was kind of talking about that as the podcast got started. Babies keep you very busy. I mean, you don't have any babies anymore, but you've got two kids at home, a little boy and a little girl, and man, it is, I mean, you've been there and done that, but it is a lot of work. You know, I was letting our listeners know, I think in the last, you know, 14 days, I've probably had maybe 24 hours of sleep combined. I mean, it's just unreal. But you know, we had some friends over tonight for that we hadn't seen in a few weeks, and you know, they're a young married couple. They're actually one of the first couples that I married after I got my license. And but they were, you know, just over hanging out, and we're talking about kids and stuff. And I told them, you know, well, they'd asked about, you know, well, let me start over. My friend Dylan made a comment, you know, so that we both just looked so happy, you know, even with, you know, all the craziness going on, we both seemed so happy. And, you know, I made the comment to him, you know, even with all the screaming and being up all night, and, you know, as much as when he, you know, when Owen gets on a little rampage of, you know, screaming and crying, you know, for 3-4 hours straight at midnight until 4 a.m, even at those points, you know, as crazy as I'm getting in my brain, you know, trying to, you know, survive through the night, I'm just so full of joy, man. You know, I just can't, it's just hard to express at the, you know, the craziest point of having a kid. There's still just so much joy involved. And every time he cries, you know, it's as much as it's, you know, it can drive you crazy, it's a blessing, man. And just hearing him, you know, basically, you know, yell out, you know, I need mom, I need dad, I need, you know, the boob or whatever it is, you know, it's just awesome to hear that from him. And it's crazy, man. But like I said, I know you've been there twice. And not to disclose too much to our listeners, you won't be there again, you know, at least not anytime soon. So
no, sir. No, I will not. I always tell people, I think that you learn a completely different aspect of what Father God is like when you have a child. I mean, and you're just getting started, but there's so many things that you see, you know, with your kids, and so many things that I think that you start to understand about God. And I think it's not a coincidence that a lot of people, I find a lot of people that have left the church or whatever, they often come back after they have children. There's just something about it. And I don't mean to, you know, talk about it like it's the greatest thing ever, because I know there are people who are celibate that may be listening, or there are people that haven't found someone or that don't have that. I'm not to say that you can't experience the fullness of Christ at all, but I do really feel like there's something unique becoming a father yourself and being able to understand that father heart of God for sure. And you'll walk in that even more so over the next coming years as they begin to talk and they begin to interact with you and you begin to have a relationship with them and you begin to impose discipline and all these things. You just are able to have such more of a intimate and different way of looking at Father God, I feel like, for sure.
Yeah, man, absolutely. You know, I told, you know, we talked about this on the podcast last week, but you know, I mean, just to mention again, you know, the first Bible verse that came to my mind after Owen was born was John 3:16, you know, and it's just until, you know, it's not that, you know, someone who hasn't had children can't, you know, feel the weight or understand, you know, that passage or something like that. You know, God's word speaks to everyone. So, but there is something almost tangible about having a child, especially, I mean, even, you know, having a baby boy and thinking, you know, man, this is, you know, God gave up his only son for our salvation. And, you know, that hit me really, really hard, you know, as soon as Owen was born and I got to hold him for the first time. I just, you know, just went through my mind like, no way. Like I could not give up Owen for anything or anyone. You know, it's my baby. And to think that God did that for us, that's profound, man. And I think, you know, having children, you know, you just look at that a little differently, you know.
No doubt, man. We went through Genesis this past week. We kind of finished it up. We've been going through it for a couple months in our home care group. And that's also, guys, while we're trying this out on Monday nights now, Sunday nights kind of starting to become a little bit of an issue. I don't like to kick people out of the house. We have a house full of people that come, you know, wanting to read the word and hang out and just, you know, be the church in a house. And I just love it so much, and I'm reluctant to kind of kick people out. So we're having to maybe switch to Monday night. So if this was a part of your Monday morning commute, you might have to just switch it to Tuesday. So we appreciate you guys kind of moving with us as we kind of find our groove.
Man, Mondays are going to be so crappy again.
We were going through Genesis, you know, and you kind of have this whole culmination we've been going through the last few weeks with Joseph and Jacob and Joseph's brothers and the whole situation when Joseph was in Egypt. And, you know, it was really cool to kind of build to that moment of the reunion, when Jacob decides to go back to Egypt. He finally finds out that Joseph's been alive. You know, we tend to go over chapters and verses sometimes so quickly that you don't really kind of put together time frames. Like even when we were going through the study, one of my friends looked up, like when Jacob sent Joseph to go find his brothers, he looked it up and did the kind of like geography of it. He had to go 87 miles to find his brothers.
Probably took them about an hour and 15.
Yeah. I'm just
thinking, they didn't have cars back then. Never mind.
No, I'm thinking, so like Joseph is like, when I hear that story, I think he like walked down the hill and told his brothers to come up for dinner. You know, he went 87 miles on foot, and then he got there and he told them there was somewhere else. He had to go another 13 miles. So the kid traveled over 100 miles. And one thing that was cool is we kind of get to the end of the story there when Jacob decides he's going to go. He finally finds out, you know, it was 20-something years that he had to live with the hurt of losing his son and not knowing what had happened and all that thing. And when it kind of builds to that point where Israel and Joseph are finally reunited, and it's in Genesis 46, if you guys want to read it, verse 29. And he just says that when Joseph had appeared before him, that Israel threw his arms around him, and they both just wept for a long time. And, you know, I just imagined what that would have been like for 20 years to think that your son was gone, and then to finally hear that he's alive, and maybe even on the journey, it was a long journey, I'm sure, to all the way to Egypt, still thinking, you know, there's no way this is right or whatever's going on. And then to actually have it, you know, he'd probably replayed that moment in his brain a million times before it actually happened. And I got really emotional reading it. And the only thing I could think of, we talked to Aaron Rose a few weeks ago, our pastor's son who was lost at sea. And, you know, they were separated for less than 24 hours, but just that uncertainty and then the culmination of being reunited. And all I could think of is that just pales in comparison to when we are reunited with our father, you know, and we have been separated from him by sin from birth. And, you know, we talk about the celebration that goes on in heaven at the rejoicing of, you know, one lost sheep who comes back, one lost soul who is reunited with the Father. And it was just, man, it was just powerful to think of how emotional that must have been for Jacob and Joseph, and kind of a little foreshadowing of us being reunited through Christ to our Creator.
Yeah, and that's actually, yeah, I guess I never really had reason to, but, you know, I never really looked at that story that way, and or even really thought about it that way until you had mentioned it earlier when we were talking. Well, I think it was the other day you had mentioned that y'all were going through it and kind of talked about that passage. But, you know, I've never looked at it that way. And, you know, as you're talking about it, and, you know, as I'm just kind of thinking about it, that's really profound, man. You know, especially you think of that story. And of course, you know, like we had mentioned, you know, on that same podcast with Aaron Rose, you know, the story of the prodigal son, and, you know, how, you know, the father was, he ran out into the road to meet him. So that's something, again, you know, it's not that, you know, people who don't have children or something can't, you know, understand or feel the weight of those passages, because most certainly they can. And from different perspectives, you know, maybe somebody who grew up without a dad or something along those lines or something, you know, they can, there's other ways to, you know, make that story more, not more real, but I guess have a tangible aspect to it. But more personal. But nevertheless, I would like to, if we could, Mr. Jared Stephen Faree, ask you a question. Can I ask you a question?
I most certainly have an answer.
Okay. Well, you've already asked me this question, technically, because you sent it in an email. So I'm going to ask you the same question back, and then I can, you know, then I'll answer for myself. But if you had to, on a scale from 1 to 10, rate yourself as a listener, Mr. Faree, how would you rate yourself?
Yeah, so short answer to that, as a listener, I would say, if you asked me this question, yeah, if you asked me this question 6 months ago, I would say like a 2. I would say now maybe a 5 or 6. You know, the idea of kind of what we're talking about, this lost art of listening, you know, the need for apologetics and knowing why you believe what you believe, and you find so many encouraging ideas from starting to really pour in, and you realize there's like a tremendous amount of evidence, if you've never studied it, for the scriptures, for the reliability of them, for the existence of God, for all these things can be really exciting. And like Brandon was kind of talking when I jumped in about, sometimes we're just waiting for people to kind of shut up so we can start talking. It's hard, man. It's hard for me. And I also think that, too, there's a difference between hearing and listening. You can hear someone talking, but are you truly listening to what they're saying? So I would say for me, it's a growing time, and I'd say I'm about halfway there. So I'd put myself at a 5 or a 6. It's tough, but there's always room for improvement.
Yeah, I think similar to what you just said, you know, I don't know if it would have been 6 months ago, but I can definitely say, you know, if I would have had to rate myself, you know, at some point in the past, you know, I would have, oh man, you know, either a
negative
1
numbers?
Or yeah, either a 1 or like a 0.5. I almost hate to even say it, but I mean, even now, you know, I've definitely, some friends who I trust, who know me very well, and, you know, don't have a problem, you know, calling spade a spade sometimes. You know, I still have a problem with listening, and I have a habit for not being a good listener. And for, you know, I can actually remember a friend of mine pointed out to me one time, I was having a conversation with his dad, and after the fact, he said, you know, man, you were talking to my dad, and, you know, I don't think you looked him in his eyes one time when y'all were having a conversation. And, you know, that was just me not being engaged. You know, I would say what I had to say, and when he was talking, I was just kind of off in my own little world, not really paying attention. And so I have a habit even now of not being a good listener. But I do think I have improved quite a bit. And I do think I have my moments where, you know, I could be a very, very good listener. You know, I have a lot of, I don't want to say a lot, because I probably don't have a lot of friends in the first place, but I do have, you know, a couple of friends of mine who, had come to me and confide some, you know, important things going on in their life to me, because they knew that I would sit down and I would listen to them, and I wouldn't just try to, you know, give them advice. You know, I would actually be there to try to empathize with them. So I swing back and forth, man. My pendulum is just, you know, it's bouncing around all over the place from, you know, not paying attention at all to, you know, being the easiest guy in the world that you could talk to. So, I guess maybe if I average myself out, then, you know, maybe I end up like a 4 or something. I don't know.
Yeah. It's just a hard, I think, in the society we live in, the culture we live in, it's so rapid fire, so fast paced, so quick. Give it to me 10 minutes ago. Society, it's very hard, especially if you're busy, to not kind of get lost in, you know, what do I have to do next, or scanning the room to see if anybody's leaving that you want to see before they leave. It's very, very hard. You do have to kind of focus yourself. And I think too, when you start to love people, you know, as Christ loves people, and you start to value them, it makes it a lot easier. I think sometimes too, for me, it's always been arrogance of feeling intellectually superior to someone that I'm talking to. So therefore, if I can't learn anything from this person, me standing here and listening to them is an incredible waste of time. And that comes from arrogance. And I think that's why, you know, we talk about that scripture, 1 Peter 3:15, of listening and, you know, being, I'm forgetting the exact phrasing now, because I'm thinking about something else at the same time, the idea of listening to someone and talking to them and doing it with humility, and, you know, not thinking yourself better. And I think that's been a problem for me in the past, for sure, is it's when you feel like, when you arrogantly feel like somebody has nothing to offer you, it's really hard to pay attention.
Yeah, I think that's one side of the arrogant part. And I think another one is always feeling like you have to have something to say. I think that's what I, more often than not, I think that's the position that I find myself in. It's, you know, I feel like I have the best advice. I feel like I have the answer. I feel like, you know, and I think that's almost a stronger side of arrogance, you know, that I know it all, you know, I know everything, whatever I'm about to tell you is what you really need to hear for your situation to become better. You know, if you would just listen to me, then everything would be okay. And I'm reading through a book right now that's, you know, been read by countless millions of people, but it's by Stephen Covey, you know, his book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, who, by the way, Stephen Covey is a Mormon, and I did not know that. And I was a little upset when I found out. I'm not anymore. I'm over it. I mean, it is what it is. It's still a great book, but I mean, moving on, he has a great quote in that book where he says, most people do not listen with the intent to understand. They listen with the intent to reply. And I think a lot of times that's, like I said, that's where I find myself. Like I'm listening, maybe, you know, at least it seems like I'm listening, but what I'm really doing is waiting for my chance to talk. I'm really just waiting for my chance to interject, my chance to have something to say, my chance to chime in with some, you know, earth-shattering advice that's just going to change your life forever, when I really don't have any of that advice in the first place. And it's just, you know, it's pride. It's that inability to empathize with another person and to just put yourself in their position. You know, what would you, if you were going through, you know, if you had a problem that you're dealing with, you know, what would you want the person listening to you to be like? You know, what position would you want them to be in? You know, many times I think, you know, people just want somebody to listen. You know, they just need to get something off of their chest. They just need to vent. They just need to have somebody to talk to. And when it comes to apologetic issues, you know, somebody has a question about their faith, that they're struggling with their faith, or an unbeliever, a lot of times, you know, and they want to talk to somebody about it. They're not even necessarily, they're not looking for an argument. They're not looking for, you know, the great debate. They just want to have a conversation and they want somebody to actually hear them out for maybe the first time, you know. And that many times people, you know, they've been afraid to talk to their pastor about certain things, or if they're an unbeliever, they've never had a pastor talk to about it, or they've been burned by the church and they don't feel like they can go to a pastor or somebody. And so they just want to have somebody that they can talk to. And for Christians, when our first response is to just reply, to just try to win an argument, to just try to have something to say, you know, I think we shut down a very healthy dialogue pretty quickly.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things there to kind of think about. And one of the first things I was thinking about when you were talking about that idea, you know, we may not be able to see ourselves doing this, but we all hate it when someone does it to us.
And absolutely.
That's kind of like one of the things in Mere Christianity when C.S. Lewis talks about the great sin. He talks about the sin of pride, and he talks about how most of us can't see it in ourselves, but we all hate it in others. You know, and that's very, very true. And kind of like what you're talking about with the idea of people just wanting to just have someone to listen. There's so many times, I think, too, when people ask legitimate questions and they're dismissed. I can't tell you how many podcasts I listen to by secular people who started out in the faith and left the faith because of the inability of someone that they respected, whether it was a youth leader or a pastor, to answer questions that they had. And you hear this response of, well, we're not meant to know everything, constantly repeated. When I talk to people that have walked away from the church, a lot of them mentioned a very similar story of, I didn't understand this in the Bible. And because they didn't understand the Bible, they didn't understand the role of the Holy Spirit as a teacher. They didn't understand a lot of things. And so they needed people around them. They needed relationship with someone else to be able to walk through something, to bounce ideas off. You know, Brandon has been tremendously helpful to me in my life when I struggle with something that I know Brandon has more expertise on, to just enlighten me or share his knowledge, his research that he's done. I have lots of people who know my passion for the homosexual community that will come to me and ask me questions about different things because they know. And that's kind of one of the second questions that we were talking about in that Lost Art of Listening. What are some of the questions you've been asked as a result of building trust and listening? And I think that's one of the things for me that I've been able to do is, as people get to know me, you have to have a relationship with someone to know what they struggle with or what they're interested in. And, you know, a good buddy of mine is recently kind of going through a divorce, and he's talking to me about it. And my first response in my brain was, it's wrong, it's wrong, it's wrong. God hates divorce, which I've heard a billion times. And I found, for me, I actually felt like it was my job to hate people who got divorced because God hated it so much, so I'm going to hate everybody that does it. And when he kind of first came to me very humbly and just kind of shared it with me, he'd shared it with nobody else, I just kind of said, hey, man, you know, we're going to get through this. It's not the end of the world. And I really didn't know much what I thought about it. So I listened to 3 or 4 podcasts. I read a bunch of articles. I did my own study in order to help him out. And I think sometimes people feel afraid to say, I don't know. And so they just have to kind of talk. And in that talking, they can kind of do some damage. And I just was upfront with them, like, hey, man, I don't really know what's kosher, what's not, what's good, what's bad, what God approves, what he doesn't. And so I said to him, let me get back to you. And he loved that. He wasn't upset. He wasn't aggravated. And I think that, again, just kind of comes back to that humility of being able to say, hey, man, you know what? I don't know, but let's go on a journey together. And that you can't do that without relationship either.
No, you can't. I mean, you definitely can't do that without relationship. And I think, you know, a lot of times that's going to be, you know, outside of a relationship with somebody, it's very hard for them to disclose something to you that's very close to their heart, you know. And that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, like a good thing, but you know, the baggage that people carry around all the time, you know, they don't just go out and share those things, those dark parts of their life, with anybody and everybody, you know. And if you have any chance of, you know, sharing or doing life with somebody, you know, you're going to have to do it within the confines of a relationship with somebody. And so when you don't build that through listening to somebody, or if you don't listen to somebody, you're not going to be able to build that relationship. You know, you're going to come across as a counterfeit, as a fraud. You know, they're going to see through, you know, facade. Four-year? No, that's the thing how you get into your house.
I'll take D, Alex, for 200, all of the above.
the facade, there we go. You know, they see through that, you know, and you know, not being a good listener is the first thing that gives that away. You know, I've seen even in my own life when I've been on, you know, like you were saying earlier, you know, sometimes we don't see ourselves as being that person, but we know it when we see it or when we experience it. You know, there's been a lot of times in my life where I've experienced, you know, that exact situation when I'm trying to talk to somebody about something going on in my own life, and you can just tell that this person's not engaged. They're not really sincere in their listening. They're not doing, you know, they're not having an empathetic listening going on, and you lose the desire to want to continue in the conversation, the dialogue. You lose the desire to want to share any more with that person. But when you find yourself in a conversation with somebody who is engaged, who is listening, you almost feel compelled to continue talking, to continue sharing. You know, you sense, right. You know, there's some sense of camaraderie or trust that's built. You know, and you can't have a relationship without trust. You know, if you can't trust the person you're talking to, you're not going to tell them anything, and you can't blame the person. You know, why would you tell somebody something that's near and dear to your heart, something close to you, something dark or, you know, hurtful from your past to somebody who you can't trust, you know, whether that's to keep it between the two of you or to trust them to give an honest, genuine response. You know, trust is the foundation, the bedrock of that. And if you aren't somebody who listens and listens well, not just listens, but a good listener, nobody's going to trust you. And if nobody's going to trust you, nobody's going to confide, you know, their deep questions, their hard questions that they want to ask. They're not going to ask you. They're going to find somebody who cares and who's going to listen.
Absolutely.
You know, it's so funny, go ahead. Okay.
I was just saying, kind of backtracking just a little bit as we all try to graciously listen to the other person. So to backtrack a little bit, kind of the concept of this kind of came out of a book, Apologetics for a New Generation, with Sean McDowell, the general editor, and he had kind of a lot of different people write chapters. Chapter one was written by Dan Kimball and talking about a different kind of apologist, and he talked about how his own testimony of using apologetics very early in his life to share with non-Christians, and he found, you know, he'd find his non-Christian friends asking him these really tough questions, and so he started to do a lot of research to help people. But then what he found is he kind of had this theory that the longer that we're Christians, the less we socialize with non-Christians. And, man, that to me just really hit home.
Yeah.
And they have, like, three questions there. Think of the apologetic conversations you've had with people in the past 6 months. How many have been Christians and how many have been non? Who are your non-Christian friends? And then third, which really makes you feel bad, who are you praying for regularly that is not a Christian? And, man, that, you know, Byron really challenged me a few weeks ago when we did the whole topic of, like, using the scripture in personal evangelism, about how even though I feel called to the church, per se, more to minister to the body, I still need to always be looking and ready and available to show the love of Christ in my job. You know, I used to work in a secular job where I took regular one-hour lunch breaks with a lot of secular people, and I almost wish that I had the knowledge now that I did then, or that I had the knowledge then that I do now. That's backwards. Because, like, now I still work in a secular job, but it's more of like a delivery type job. I have to be in, I have to be out. I don't really have time for lunch breaks. I constantly eat on the road. I mean, I've learned to talk on the phone, eat, and drive with my knees better than anybody in the country. I would love to do an Olympic sport for them. But I don't really have a lot of social interaction with unbelievers. And so I like the idea in this book that, like, he would pick a place to kind of frequent, to get his coffee at all the time and kind of get to know the people that work there and just initiate conversations, whether it's about music or whatever else. And I know, Brandon, you probably, I feel like, at least you still work in a secular job, so you're around people a lot more. I know that you and your brother play your music in secular settings, so I feel like you're probably in that type of setting a lot more often where you still are able to engage with non-Christians. But for somebody like me who, it seems like, no doubt, the longer I've been a Christian, the less and less I socialize with the non-Christians. And that really kind of was something for me to kind of think about and ponder this week as we kind of got ready to discuss this topic.
Yeah, me and my brother, and the, you know, like you said, you know, playing music in secular settings. I mean, honestly, you know, we've only had maybe, you know, the only show that we played that wasn't at a bar was at the fair, and they still serve beer. So, I mean, typically, you know, we're playing in the bars and things like that, and that's not like a, you know, it's not some kind of poke at, you know, the whole, you know, we need to be whatever. I mean, I'm there because I like the bars. We enjoy playing the bars. I enjoy going to the bar. I enjoy having a beer. So it's not one of those, you know, I'm trying to infiltrate, you know, the unbelievers hideout or something like that. You know, I'm there because I have a good time while I'm there. It's not to say that I'm there being drunk or you know, getting hammered and, or something like that. But I'm with that environment. So it's not that kind of a thing. But I mean, that is where we spend the majority of our time as a band. You know, the other two members of our band are not Christians. One of our members in our band grew up actually in the church that I attend and no longer goes to church anymore. Him and his family aren't believers. And even at work, you know, I don't know if I work with any, at least, outspoken Christians. And that's partially, I've only been at the new location I'm at for a couple of weeks, but I haven't engaged anyone in a conversation specifically about my faith yet. And so I don't know if I even work with any believers or not. You know, I have in the past, but at any rate, yeah, I'm around, you know, a much larger secular audience than you find yourself. And but even then, you know, it's still difficult. You know, I mean, on the one hand, you have to be very careful because of, you know, it's did a, you know, a harassment, you know, training the other day, a little online training at work for harassment and stuff. And I mean, to be totally honest, you have to be very careful about the religious, you know, the religious conversations you have with people at work, which is kind of a bummer. You know, I've more often than not find myself probably going on what is allowed with those conversations, you know, in the past. But you have to be careful, you know, what you bring up at work about your beliefs, you know, what you say about another person's belief. You know, if I were to criticize someone for not being a Christian or for holding to a different belief system, another faith system than I did, I could find myself in a lot of trouble. And honestly, it's, you can
have conversations. You bring up an interesting point. I'm not trying to cut you out. You bring up an interesting point right there because I feel like those types of things are in place because we've probably done such a poor job of being salt and light.
Yeah.
You know,
I would agree.
So it's like,
partially,
because we haven't done it properly, they've put restrictions to make sure that we do it properly when we should have been doing that way in the first place. And so I feel like, you know, even when I go to these PFLAG meetings, PFLAG is the Parents, Friends, and Families of Lesbians and Gays. There's local branches all over the country. You know, they have rules that state, you know, we're not here to talk about religious beliefs. We're not here to talk about other things. So I definitely don't dance around the issue, but I am very respectful. It's almost like I'm being forced, in a sense, to act out 1 Peter 3:15 because we can't do it on our own. They've kind of put constrictions on us to make sure that we stick to guidelines that we should be doing anyways.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think that for sure, you know, part of the reason is probably that, you know, that we've done a bad job in the past. You've had complaints, you've had people file, you know, all these, you know, whatever with HR about, you know, so-and-so said this to me and this was disrespectful or hurtful. And we, on the other side, you know, I think a lot of times within just the secular workplace that, you know, that's just going to happen in general. You know, they're the, you know, walls of the church, you know, they do not, you know, meet too well with, you know, much of the secular world. But at any rate, you know, all that to say, you know, even within being around, you know, unbelieving people a lot, it's still difficult to engage people as conversations. You know, it's not just because, oh, well, I'm around all these people now, so I must have people, you know, filing, you know, together, you know, to just, you know, engage me and, you know, to debate me about, you know, whether or not God exists or something like that. I mean, that doesn't happen. Which, that being said, as we mentioned earlier, you know, most, if not every conversation that I've ever had at work, I would say most have all started somebody coming to me with a question because they knew what I believed. You know, there's not many conversations, and maybe this is to a fault, I'm not sure, but, you know, there's not many conversations I've had about my faith at work that I engaged. It was mostly people who knew either I was a Baptist minister or, you know, they knew I went to church or they heard me talking about a book I was reading or, you know, I mentioned my faith about something. And then at some point, you know, they felt, you know, hey, I can talk to this guy. He seems like somebody that I can bring this question to. You know, I had a girl at work one time who was thinking about getting engaged to her boyfriend. Apparently, you know, he didn't propose, but they had been talking about marriage. And she came up to me and she's like, you know, I don't know how I feel about this guy. You know, I'm not really sure about, you know, I don't know if I'm ready to take that step. You know, she was really young. I think she was like 19 or 20. And she came to me about it. And it wasn't a religious question, but she brought it up in the context of, you know, I knew that you had, you know, said that you had married, you know, these two friends of yours or whatever, you know, and you talked about counseling or whatever, you know, do you have any advice you could give me? You know, and so, and I listened. And then at that moment, you know, I listened well, and that gave me an opportunity to share my faith with her and what it means for, you know, what marriage looks like, what's the foundation of a marriage, what I believed, you know, the definition definition of marriage was and all those things. And, you know, it was because I listened to what she had to say. You know, I didn't, as soon as she asked me, oh, well, you know, you don't need to be unequally yoked. Is he a Christian? You know, well, then there, you can't get married anyway. There's, you know, marriage is only between two, you know, Christian men and women or something like that. And some, you know, just ignorant response. But we're getting close to the end here already. It's, I mean, it's crazy. Even, you know, we bumped up our time just a few minutes and we're still, we still took it up quick. I'll blame it on Jared for taking so long to get on the line tonight. But yeah, Jared, we got about 3.5 minutes left. You got any final thoughts? Maybe we can pick this back up or something similar to, we can carry it over to another podcast when Byron gets back from his I don't know what you want to call it, his vacation out in South Padre.
His baby making vacay. Well, actually, we'll be good because we'll still have a buffer of 15 minutes, so we don't have to stick hard. I think that idea of just listening is tough for people, and especially for people that like to talk, that have a lot to say, which I think Brandon and I would both humbly put ourselves in that category. Because, you know, well, I always tell people when you put a lot in, a lot wants to come out. A really cool thing is
same happened, when you like eat. There's a,
yes, that's true. That's very true. It's a very wise principle. So a friend of ours was kind of posting some rather things that kind of got under my skin a little bit. And rather than, you know, ripping them apart on social media, because I've got to get the social media bell in there tonight. We didn't say social media
yet. Oh, yeah. We haven't mentioned social media at all.
That's the longest we've ever done it. But he was kind of on social media rant, just about a bunch of different things. And rather than kind of putting him on blast and calling him out, I chose a private message him and kind of email him back and forth. And I had to get his phone number, because he had changed numbers since the last time I talked to him, from somebody else. And I was kind of seeking this guy out to kind of just, you know, have a dialogue, open a dialogue with him. And he's been very unresponsive. But in the process of that, the person I reached out to get to him has really been kind of drawn to me the last few weeks. And been, you know, approaching me about things and talking to me about things and wanting to study the Bible together and wanting to read books and stuff. So I think you too need to be just open to people that come into your lives and not, I think sometimes like you say, well, man, I really have a lot to say, that the pastor should give me the pulpit. Well, there's only one pulpit and everybody can't occupy it, you know, and maybe you've got 3 or 4 circle of friends who are really hurting, who are really needing something. But because you feel like you're supposed to be in this higher exalted position, you miss out. And so I think the best thing to just try to do is every day just, you know, find that quiet place where you can just ask God, who's he going to put in your path today and what does he want you to do? And just being reminded, the end of the chapter kind of talked about being reminded that the ultimate apologetic is Jesus in us, that's even what the Bible says, that they will know us by our love for one another. And, you know, ask yourself the question, does your life demonstrate the fruit of the Spirit? And who are you meant to be encountered with that day to show Jesus to? You know, you may be the only Jesus that person ever sees. And so really just kind of keeping that in your mind. And are your conversations about some disgusting program you watched on TV last night, and do you join in the crass jokes if you work at a mostly male job where guys are being nasty all the time? Do you join in and laugh at those things, or is your conversation being filled with grace and seasoned with salt? And you know, I just think that sometimes we have people in our lives that we really want to make an impact on, or we really want to have a relationship with, and God's called us to do it with someone else. And I have to be very sensitive to stories I tell on the podcast, because we do have a lot of people that we each know that listen to the podcast. And, I mean, cool story. So Byron was telling me the other day, someone started coming to his interest meetings from listening to the podcast. And Byron was like, what podcast? And he's like, I'm a meerkat. And so apparently that's the but, Byron's like, what episode did you listen to? And he's like, all of them. So kudos to you, dude, for listening to, all the episodes. And, I guess the meerkat thing is sticking. So I have to be careful with some of the stories I tell to be sensitive to people. But man, you know, there's been times where I felt like I was supposed to have a really awesome relationship with someone, and I was going to be the person that really helped them find Jesus and everything else, and it was somebody else. And I need to celebrate that and not be upset about that. And I need to always be aware of those people. When someone calls me at 10:45 at night, I'm never upset about it. Like, oh God, why is this guy calling me? I'm always excited to know that God is putting somebody in my path that feels the need to call me at 10:45 that felt that they could call me at 10:45 and know that I'm going to be able to show Jesus to them at 10:45.
Yeah, man. I mean, I think that just goes back to, you know, what Paul says, that, you know, that, you know, one person plants, another person waters, but it's always God who gives the growth. So, I mean, whoever is going to be that person, then, you know, so be it. Yeah. I mean, praise God for that. I'm going to be honest. I was looking at our on-air time and it showed that our recording time had gone away. I'm going to trust you that we still had some time left. And I wrote down our 15 minute mark to, you know, see where we need to try to close this thing out. You know, there was another question that you had asked, or that you had mentioned earlier. I just wanted to respond to it real quick because you had mentioned it about how Byron had kind of convicted you with some of the things he said about, you know, who are you praying for regularly that is not a Christian? And, you know, when I read that question, man, that really, you know, hit me, you know, punched me in the soul pretty hard because, you know, I here lately have not found myself really regularly praying for any friends of mine who are not Christians. And, you know, that's, you know, I guess you could almost, you could call that like, you know, I'm doing a disservice to them or something like that. But I mean, it's much, you know, worse. It's much more profound than, you know, some pithy statement like that. And, you know, I think if we're going to have these conversations with our unbelieving friends, if we're going to have, you know, or family for that matter, whoever these people are, or if we're going to expect these people to talk to us in the first place, the power of prayer is indispensable. You know, if we're not going to be, you know, asking God, you know, to prepare our heart for when these conversations happen, if we're not asking, you know, God to, you know, Lord, let me, you know, be, you know, let me have humility. Let me, you know, get rid of the pride that's in my life, you know, prepare my mind and my spirit for when this conversation happens, that I'm ready to, you know, to be gentle, to be respectful, that I have set you apart in my heart as Lord, you know, and that we're praying for these people, either just for their, you know, for their salvation in general, that God would, you know, do just a miraculous work in their life, that he would create new life in them. But also praying that God would bring them to us, you know, that we would, you know, hey, man, you know, Lord, I have this friend. I mean, you know who he is. I have this family member. Would you prepare that for a conversation between me and them? Would you set up a situation? I mean, you're sovereign. You know both of our lives. You orchestrate our lives. Would you set up a situation? Would you do something to where, man, I cross paths with this guy, to where, you know, something happens in your providence that I see this person and that we can engage in a conversation, and that when we do, I'll be ready to talk to them with gentleness and with meekness, ready to share the gospel with them, ready to answer the questions that they may have. I mean, what about you, man? Is there somebody in your life that you have been regularly praying for? Are you kind of in the same position as me that you don't feel like you've been doing that?
No, lately? When I read that quote in that book, it just, like you said, you called it a soul punch. I called it a gut punch. It could be either or. It was a Mike Tyson punch out. Yeah, man, it's very humbling to just remember, you know, we do get so focused, especially like I said, myself, who feels called more to minister to the church body, to neglect. I've invited several friends, to come to things that I know aren't saved or aren't walking greatly, and their interest to me always seems very excited, but then that doesn't usually materialize into an actual, body showing up at a meeting. But to be honest with you, I just kind of asked them. I never prayed that God would draw them in. I never did a lot of those things. I told, we had a young person over here the other night, and I was just talking to them about, you know, the premarital sex and relations and all these types of things, and just kind of sowing into these two kids' lives and just talking with them about all of that stuff and how, you know, God saved me that I was not born in the age of technology, because I would have fallen. You know, I remember being, I don't know, 19, 20 years old, never had sex. And I remember saying, I know some girls that are down to party. They're just, you know, they'll do it with anybody, and trying to get a hold of those girls not on nights where I felt like I wanted to just run rampant and sow my wild oats and didn't care anymore. And who cares what God wants for me? I know what's best type of things. And it's always weird. Like, I could never find those chicks. I never knew where they weren't home. Their parents didn't know where they were. This was before the age of cell phones. And it seems like, you know, three or four
times. Was this the age of beepers?
No, if they had beepers, I didn't have their number. So, but it used to be hard to get a hold of people. Now it's not hard at all. They ignore you, but you can still get them. You can still text them. You can still see that they read it, you know, so you know they got the message. But back in the day, the struggle was real, man. And so I remember feeling like, in particular, that like one night that someone was praying for me, like that night. And I just got just tore up inside, man, because I knew that I was seeking that which was wrong. And I really do feel like it was the prayers of my parents and my family members that were Christian that were always praying, that, you know, just praying for me in general, and God moving in the way that he knew in the specific. And you're right, man, it's very easy to neglect prayer. We all believe in the power of it, but it's probably one of the most easiest things to neglect. Like, I love my time reading the word. I love listening to worship music. I love having conversations like this. I love listening to podcasts, but I often don't make the time to just, you know, sit and talk and let his thoughts become mine and lift up my brothers and sisters. So yeah, it was definitely, I love about this podcast, guys, is that I hope you guys understand this. We don't feel like we've arrived. We're on this journey with you guys. We hope that you guys listen to this and that you can identify with some of these struggles, that when you hear that question, who are you regularly praying for, that it doesn't come from a place of we're so high and mighty, but that you understand we're on this path with you guys, and we hope that you find it encouraging. We hope that you find it challenging, and we hope that, you know, the Holy Spirit and Jesus will speak to you through the words that we say, and that you guys can identify with this, and that we can all, you know, move to being more of who he wants us to be. Because I think that's, you know, we like to have fun, we like to joke around. Maybe Byron and Brandon will so more than me sometimes. I'm the old fuddy-duddy, but you know, we just don't want to kind of party with a purpose, and the purpose being to you know, reunite people with Christ, and to bring the ones that have already been reunited a little closer. So that, yeah, I guess that's final thoughts for Jared, Steve, and Kareem.
Well, those are good final thoughts, man. There's a quote that I always really like by J.I. Packer, and he's talking about God's power in evangelism and in prayer. It's a really good book. It's not too long, but it's called Evangelism and the Sovereignty of God. Really classic book on evangelism by a great theologian and church and scholar, J.I. Packer. But in regards to God's sovereignty in prayer, you know, he says that on our feet, we may have arguments about it in regards to, you know, the extent of God's sovereignty. On our feet, we may have arguments about it, but on our knees, we are all agreed. You know, there's power in prayer. You know, I mean, absolutely, we all believe that, all Christians believe that, that God can and does respond powerfully to prayer. And that's not just about, you know, prayers in regard to, you know, well, so-and-so might be sick, or, you know, Lord, I have this test tomorrow that I didn't study for, please, you know, give me the answers, or something like that. You know, in regards to people, you know, in our evangelism and in doing apologetics, you know, prayer is central to that. You know, if we aren't, you know, consistently on our knees before God, asking for strength, asking for, you know, nourishment, spending time in his word, you know, and praying that his word would speak to us, that it would be, you know, living and active in our lives, as it says in Hebrews, then, you know, we're going to fall on our face in our evangelism. We're going to fall on our face in our apologetic conversations that we have with other people. You know, we can know all the right answers. We can know all the arguments. You know, we can know the teleological argument, the cosmological argument, the ontological argument. You know, we can know all these things, but if we aren't before God in prayer, asking him to remove the pride out of our life, to take the arrogance out of our life, to give us, you know, a heart that is gentle and kind and respectful, he is a center of, it's going to be fruitless, you know, unless, of course, you know, God decides that he's going to do a work in spite of our idiocracy, which he does and has done in my life plenty of times. That, you know, just kind of pushed me out of the way and said, okay, Brandon, you're done being a big dummy here. I'm going to, you know, take care of the rest. But yeah, you know, like Jared said, to all of our listeners out there, you know, we hope that, you know, please don't think that we're at some place. You know, I was going to make a Jesus juke on Jared there when he said high and mighty. I was going to say, you know, only the Lord's high and mighty. But, you know, don't, we are at some place that is beyond where any of our listeners are at. You know, I can assure you that there are plenty of our listeners who are much further along their faith journey than Jared or Byron and I are at. So with that being said, we appreciate you guys listening to us. We ran a little long tonight, which I'm okay with. I hope everyone else is okay with, you know, hopefully in the future of our audio difficulties worked out. And I would like to say, I know Jared was being a little pessimistic beginning, I would some optimism. I do think we are slowly, very slowly getting better at our audio and the, you know, the other technical sides of, you know, doing a podcast, and hopefully we'll continue to do better as the weeks go on. You know, maybe getting to the point where we can, you know, edit some of these podcasts down to, you know, streamline them a little bit better for our listeners' sake. But with all that being said, you know, all of our meerkats out there, you know, we hope you guys have a great week. We hope the Lord blesses you guys. And Byron, I hope you're out there making a baby. So we'll talk to you guys next week.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.